Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome to episode 61 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. Today, I have Steph Knapp. She's a SaaS onboarding specialist who has looked at 153 emails to give you a breakdown of what onboarding emails actually work. Now, writing your onboarding email series is an art of itself. Not only do you need to know everything there is to know about your product and your users, you also need to know the right timing for the communication with your users. In this episode, Steph shares her best practice based on 16 full email series breakdowns that consist of over 153 emails. In this episode, you'll learn 1. Insights and best practices from onboarding emails from across the top SaaS companies like Shopify, Monday, Wistia, MailChimp, FreshBooks and Gusto. 2. Why onboarding emails are important and how to approach them and how to strategize the series for the biggest impact. And 3. What makes great onboarding email subject lines, the copy and the design. Now, I've created a growth cheat sheet from this episode that lays out Steph's step-by-step onboarding strategy. Why take notes when you can steal mine? You can get the cheat sheet at growthtoday.fm/61, or you can get it in the link in the description. If you've been listening to a few episodes of this show, consider supporting it. This podcast is a one-person show. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast. I made it easy for you. The 3 easy ways. First, tell your friend about it. You can share a quote from the episode page. 2, you can join the Growth Today mailing list where I'll email you the cheat sheet and all the ones in the future and let you know who my next guests are. You can go to the website growthtoday.fm to do that. And 3, you can support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode. You can go to patreon.com/growthtoday. And I just want to thank my early adopter Patreon. So far, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Fabricio Marcias from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, and Sam Grover from New Zealand. I really appreciate you for supporting me and making this show happen. Anyway, enough about me. Let's jump in my chat with Steph. Hey everybody, I'm excited to talk to Steph about onboarding emails. She has written a lot of content and she's doing a webinar that's coming up. How's it going, Steph? How are things with you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
And you're calling from Nashville. How is it there?
Nashville, Tennessee. It's good. It's ever so slightly overcast. Crossing my fingers for some rain. It's pretty dry here. And some for fall weather. That would be great. It's so hot.
I did get into a bout of country music. I'm curious if you love country music at all.
I don't. My mom does, but I'm not into it. But we're lucky being in Nashville that there's plenty of other music to be enjoyed.
And there's a lot of music, like live music stuff there, right? Like
there is. So I actually live a little bit outside of Nashville, and fun because this weekend, I mean, like really right around the corner, there's going to be a music festival. And I think it's going to be like Foo Fighters and The Killers and Keith Urban. And yeah. And I'm crossing my fingers. I think I'll be able to hear it from my balcony. So
what? That's amazing.
Foo Fighters. Here, yeah.
Foo Fighters is my band when I was in high school. Like I listened to all their songs pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't beat Dave Grohl. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah. It'd be pretty cool.
Well, before we talk about onboarding emails, I'm curious, when did you start focusing on marketing and writing for SaaS companies? Like I noticed you have a lot of content for SaaS.
Yeah, I think it really came about as an intersection of just different projects I was working on, which is sort of a perfect mix. So I was doing a lot of email marketing strategy and some copywriting within an agency. And so that's where the email perspective comes in. And then at the same time, I started writing content for SaaS company, particularly one that focused a lot on customer success and talked a lot about onboarding. And so I sort of combined those two interests together. And that's how I sort of ended up here. And then as I was working on the strategy projects within the agency, I was always looking for example emails to include in presentations. And I would use sites like Really Good Emails, which is an amazing resource with lots of emails, but I always had a hard time finding complete email series from front to end. And so I just started collecting emails and I started signing up for free trials and saving the emails. And then I started writing about them because one, I think onboarding is a really interesting point in the life cycle. And then they're also easy to sign up for and get the emails and save them, yet I wasn't finding a ton of examples. So yeah, I think it was just a perfect storm of different interests being combined together.
I like that.
And that's how I ended up here, yeah.
I really like that. You said that onboarding is a really interesting part of the life cycle. Why do you say that?
I think it was such like a make or break point because, you know, using a SaaS and onboarding is all about establishing a habit. And it's sort of like, okay, so something I relate onboarding to is if you've ever set a goal at the beginning of a new year and you start off really excited and you have big plans,
right?
But what needs to happen? What's that foundation or the groundwork that needs to be laid so that you can actually continue on with the goal and see it through? And I relate those feelings in that stage to onboarding. It's really the foundation of the long-term relationship.
Yeah, that's true. I think that kind of sets the tone. And that's what I'm finding is, we'll talk about it more, but one of the things I find is a lot of companies, they barely send any communication during the trial or during the onboarding because of fear. They're like, oh, I don't want to bother my trial signups.
Yeah.
Is that something you're finding, like with onboarding communication that are not performing well or that just sucks? Like they don't even send any emails. They don't even send any communication.
Yeah. So I've done a lot of onboarding email breakdowns on my site, but there are also a lot of series that I started saving and then they never made it to a post because I would get like a welcome email and then I just leave them be. I don't touch it so that I don't interfere with any sort of triggers or different sequences they have. And it's like, here's a welcome. And then it's like, your trial ended.
What the heck?
And I'm like, wait.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. I wonder in those cases, is it too much of a triggered sequence where they're relying on you interacting with it to sort of fuel it along? And in that case, you need to say something.
Right.
Because when I'm working with clients on all different sorts of email series, and even me as a freelancer and working with clients, needing to follow up, and as someone who's done cold emailing, I understand the apprehension to follow up for some of a lot of emails. You're like, oh, I don't want to bother them, or I don't want to, and then it'll seem obsessive. But something, you know, that I've had to get over and that maybe other people need to get over is people are busy and they have a lot of other things going on. And something I think I've mentioned in some of my past posts, and that maybe sounds harsh but comes from a place of love, but it's that you don't matter that much in the life of someone you've just met. And so even if your product can be super helpful, or you could help someone with a service and they may see your email and, oh, that's really interesting, I need to respond to that later, or I'll log in later. And then life happens, you know, stuff comes up. We have our attention being pulled in a million different directions. And if you don't follow up, then life happens and then your window is gone. So yeah, I totally understand where people are like, oh, I don't want to bother them. But until you receive just a ton of people saying, please, this is too much, this isn't working, then you might be leaving opportunities on the table. But I totally understand that fear, not wanting to bother people.
That's so good. I totally agree. Is that you're right. People get busy, but people are also forgetful. They're like, oh, I signed up for this. What is it again? What does it do? I don't remember, right?
Yeah.
And I think with more free trials, more people are just randomly signing up for stuff that it's like, oh, I'm just going to sign up for this. And either their friend told them about it or they found it on Product Hunt, which is like kind of sucks if like that's how that happens, right?
Yeah.
I want to see the flip of that and talk about what are things that you find are best practice. I know you've looked at a bunch of other, you know, you talked about SaaS onboarding. You've looked at like teardowns of companies like Shopify. You've looked at Zendesk and Freshbook. Mm-hmm. Which company's onboarding email sequence do you like the best? Like, is there one company that really stands out?
Yeah, so there are a few that stand out for maybe different reasons. One is Wistia, their welcome email. I don't know how many times I've brought it up because I bring it up all the time, but their welcome email is a poem.
Oh.
And it's all about the company and their different products, but it rhymes. And there's a cute little animation of like parading, like it's a dog and a camera. And it's very celebratory, and it was so different, and it stood out so much that even though I've looked at a ton of other emails, that one still always comes to mind. So I think if you can bring out your brand's personality in the onboarding emails and do something a little different, it leaves a lasting impression. Shopify, I really like because One, they're pretty straightforward. They stick to the same format of the email. It's very clear what they want me to do with each email, why they want me to do it. And then I think Shopify is also really great at sending resources that support the person's journey, not necessarily just here's how to use Shopify, but we understand why you're here, what's going on in your life around this, how can we teach you how to be better at all those different things? Because if in Shopify's case, if your business fails, then you have no need for Shopify.
Right. Yeah.
So can we teach you about advertising or coming up with your store name? So I think that always stands out to me. I like FreshBooks. They're really good. They always have like really awesome social proof at the bottom of the email. Nice. So at the bottom of almost every email, there will be like a picture of a customer and a little quote, and just little things like that, I think, add up. And something else that I'm getting into, because I feel like a lot of the examples that I've done have been for B2B companies, and I'd really like to start looking at more some B2C. And Shopify's a little bit more, maybe it's sort of in the middle ground of that, but some emails that I've started saving recently are for Canva, which I actually use to design all my little graphics or whatever, because I'm not a designer. And something that I've noticed just within the first few emails from Canva is that they, like Shopify, are really aware of what is going on in the person's life and mind that brought them to that moment. So they're very upfront, like, hey, we know you're probably not a designer or you think you're not a good designer, but go ahead, impress yourself. It's really easy. And so recognizing where users are and meeting them there and really embracing those emotions always gets a thumbs up for me. I think it's wonderful.
Those are great examples. I'm going to sign up for all of those.
That's
the reason why I asked that. It's like, oh, I want to look at some good ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to call out any bad ones because I don't want to shout out any.
Yeah, I won't do that because there have been some where I'm like, I don't love that. So right. Yeah, I try to focus on the ones I do like, but there are good ones.
What are some no-nos? Like, what are some don'ts to, like, let's not talk about the company, but let's talk about, like, what are things that they're doing that you're not loving?
Yeah, I think something, a trap that's easy to fall in, if say you work in the company and you're making the onboarding emails, especially if it's a smaller company, so you have sort of your hands on everything, is getting really excited about the product,
right,
and all of the wonderful features that you have, and just dumping it on the users. Just like, here's everything we have. And if you think you have a tendency to do that or to talk too much, you could almost like plan out your series and write your emails and then cut it in half. I think it's, you know, quality over quantity, right, in onboarding emails. So if they are just like shoving way too much information down the throat, that's a no-no for me. If it feels like a really random assortment of features in a random order, that's a no-no for me as well. Another sort of an analogy, but maybe a mental picture that I use when thinking about onboarding is, think of the free trial as a stream, a little creek or something. And there are rocks that you could cross to get from one side of the stream to the other side. And there are a lot of different paths that you could take to get to the other side of, I guess in this instance, it would be converting to a paid user. Your job when you're creating onboarding emails is to pick the most efficient path,
right,
wow, across. So what are the most important steps that someone needs to take to recognize value as fast as possible, or to build the habit as fast as possible, or to see what's possible as fast as possible? So yeah, to summarize that, just saying too much or in a random order or not being clear about what you want someone to do.
Right.
Those are all things that I think can get in the way.
Those are good ones. When you said about too many, too much, how many emails is too many? Because I read one of your posts and you said you looked at Shopify and they sent 10 emails in 14 days. Like, is there a point where like, oh, that's way too many? And is there a point where like, you just sent two, you just said hi and bye. Like, that's not cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Two is probably way too little. I don't have any stats about, oh, this is the tipping point of way too much. Something that I have done is look at the average number of emails sent over a 14-day trial and 30-day trial. And what was interesting is that they were both right at about 9. Obviously, you always have some that are more and some that send less. Something, a sort of quick baseline that I use as a thinking point is that if you're doing, say, a completely time-based email series. Like, you're just going to send it on the specific days. Maybe you're not putting in fancier optimization, considering, oh, have they done this task? And if they do, then we'll reroute them here. You know, if it's a simple sequence, pick like 3 to maybe 5, but maybe more like 3 or 4 key steps that you want someone to do, key features or action within the app, and start with those. And then you can add some more around it if you have some of that really valuable content like Shopify has.
Right.
But start with like 3 or 4 main actions or main features, and then you can sort of build around that. I think it's a universal starting spot.
That makes sense. I want to talk about that actually. Let's say a client approaches you and they're looking for a revamp of their onboarding emails. Maybe they don't have any. Let's say they don't have any email sequence. They're like, just says hi and bye. And you come in and you're like, no, that's not good. People are forgetful.
Yeah.
What is your step-by-step process to starting from scratch, essentially, for a SaaS client with a 14-day trial?
Yeah. So coming from more of a strategy background, you know, maybe I'm biased, but I like to spend a good amount of time on strategy. For, you know, just don't dive into writing, which I think is something that it can be easy to do, to just, oh, we need to do these. Oh, let's pick a few things and let's start writing. So the first sort of project phase I call is learning, or another way to say it is just like what to say. So it's, say I'm working with a client, getting information from them about who are your users, going through like a questionnaire, and then me being someone from the outside, I spend time in the app as well to figure out what is the value of this, why would these customers care, what are they hoping to achieve, and then from that moving into the planning phase. So that's when to say it. So picking those few key actions, what are the other sort of supplementary information that we want to add in that? Like, you have a really amazing resource. Or if we had, you know, maybe a little bit too many features we wanted to talk about, can we group some of those together in like a use case email, which is just a term that I use for different tools you can use to sort of achieve the same end result. So you have the learning phase where you're figuring out who the people are, why they would be here, what you can do. The planning phase, what are the emails, what are we going to send, which days. And then there's the writing phase, so, or the how to say it phase. And then there's a refining phase, which kind of never ends. So, you know, a recent project I was working on, we went through all the other phases. You know, we had all the drafts for all the emails, and then it was like, these are all great, but this one, the tone isn't quite right. I don't think it exactly matches us. I'm like, okay, back to the drawing board. Can I see some examples of emails that you've sent in the past that have worked really well, that have resonated with your audience? Okay, we tweaked that. Okay, perfect. That email's right. And then it goes, you know, it's being designed and implemented. And then it's like, well, now I don't know. I think, should we move this one here, or this one isn't really working, or this one is working really well? What is it about this one that works really well? And so that's sort of a never-ending phase. But for a project, start with strategy every time. Take the time. I know not everyone likes it as much as I do, but it's really important to get the foundation.
That's so true. Like, you're really trying to understand, first of all, why that user signed up in the first place and what is the job they're trying to do with your tool.
Exactly.
Have you ever done any parts where you had to, like you're talking about optimization, and let's talk about subject lines, because you've looked at 153 subject lines, which is amazing.
Probably more, but...
People should download that at your website. I'm going to link it. But what were some interesting things that you found with subject lines? Because one of the first things when you're trying to optimize email campaigns or communication is how many people are opening this? Because if they don't open it, they're not going to read it. They're not going to click on it, right? So
right. Yeah. Subject lines are very much like the gatekeeper to the rest of the emails. You know, and before I jump into some of the specifics of things I found, like maybe numbers or themes, in general, the subject line and how you choose to write it, I think conveys a lot about the brand personality. For example, I have numbers. So I wanted to look at, maybe this is super nerdy, I wanted to look at the amount of subject lines that use sentence case capitalization, so just the first word is capitalized, versus title case, which is
interesting.
What you would normally think of is like, you know, New York Times, every single word is capitalized, a little bit more formal. And then there were also a few that were lowercase, all of it, every single word. So 71% of the subject lines use sentence case, which I think is a good middle ground. 22% use title case, which is, I think it comes off as a little bit more formal.
Right.
And so some of the, maybe I saw that in some of the bigger, more established brands, and then only 7% used lowercase subject lines. And then I also looked at things like length. I think the average number of characters is like 36. And then the shortest is 3. There was one that just said FYI, all lowercase.
No way.
Yeah. I'd love to see, you know, like what's the open rate on that? Because I'm just on the receiving end of these. And then the longest one was like 66 characters. It was like a super long sentence. Yeah. And then after sort of looking at those stats of the subject lines, I grouped them together both by what type of email they are. So like welcome emails versus reminder, you know, your trial's ending. And then I also was able to pull out different themes. So some themes that I was expecting and that I found are social proof. So I think one is like, Jake's thriving, you can too. Or like, join the millions of people earning more money or whatever. But then an interesting theme that I wasn't expecting and that exists more in the B2B space was this focus on being an expert.
Interesting.
So there was like, host like a pro or become an expert, which I wasn't expecting. And there weren't a ton of them, but that was one that made me go, oh, you know, I was expecting social proof or like the how-to or the results focus. But yeah, the expert, like a pro, was the one that stands out to me.
Did you find any ones with, and this might be something that people don't do in 2019 anymore beyond, is emojis? Cause...
Yeah, I think there were. So it was really, it was a pretty small percentage. I think it was like 12 emails out of 153. But again, that's something that I'd love to revisit once I've done maybe some more B2C companies. Because maybe in the B2B space, people are a little bit more buttoned up. And maybe you don't find that. Something that showed up more often than emojis were just punctuation. So like exclamation points for questions. But there were some emojis. And I always appreciate an emoji. I think I use a lot of emojis in my like my newsletter subject lines. I think it's fun. You know, it probably comes down to the brand and the personality, how formal or relaxed you are, but I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. I haven't done any testing, but I'm curious if it triggers any spam filters, if they, too many emojis in the subject lines, Google's like, oh, this is spam.
Yeah, I'd probably limit it to like one. All the ones I saw had one, I would just use one. I know I've seen some people ask about how can you make sure it shows up, you know, on all the different devices and stuff, and I'm no expert on things like deliverability. For that, I always refer to something like a litmus for testing. But I know for me, and maybe this is a super side conversation, I think I use the website like Emojipedia or something, and when you look at an emoji, it shows what it looks like on different carriers and devices and whatnot. Probably not foolproof, but maybe it works most of the time.
True, makes sense. Did you see a lot of exclamations? You talked about that a little bit, but like, is that exclamation and question marks? Like, what did you see? More periods? Did you see any like dots at all?
There were some periods, sometimes in the ones that would have like a title case. And I'm like, oh, that feels really formal. But probably the most common, I don't have them all in front of me, but just from memory, I think the most common would be a question mark. Yeah. So I don't have any examples written down. I'm trying to think of some, but there were lots of question subject lines. So that was pretty common. Or one, maybe it's like FreshBooks or something, but it's like, want to get paid lickety-split? And it has a question mark, so you need to ask a question. That one, I don't know why that one sticks out in my head, but...
Yeah, it's a weird word, lickety-split.
Yeah, lickety-split.
And you talked about the brand coming out, and with that, like, lickety-split is definitely part of their fun brand. Like, you wouldn't say that to somebody wearing a suit and a tie, right?
Yeah, and then talking about the brand coming out, I think it's CoSchedule. They had more plain text emails, which again is another brand choice. And they, within their emails, would have little like Michael Scott animations.
Interesting.
Like little gifts.
Yeah, I love gifts.
Which again is very much a brand choice. One that I appreciate, but comparing that, you know, mentally to some of the bigger, more established, or not that they're not bigger established, some of the more formal brands that you think, you know, you'd probably never see doing that. I think then adding in the fun animation makes it stand out.
Do you have a sense of, like, let's say a founder or marketer to try and increase their open rates with just the subject line? I know you looked at 153 emails. Do you have like a sense like which one probably is a good practice to try to increase your open rate?
Yeah, so I think maybe there are a few different themes or like types of subject lines that you could try. And even thinking about the emails that I send for myself and looking at those open rates, I think pulling out the outcome or the result in a subject line, especially if you, you know, maybe pair that with a question or how to. So like how to get paid like a split or, you know, how to, you know, increase this. So pulling out, you know, what's the result of, say it's onboarding, of using a feature. What can you achieve through that if you have something really interesting there? And then trying not to be clickbaity. I don't think anyone should ever be clickbaity. But if you can spark curiosity, that's always powerful. You know, maybe, yeah, maybe you leave it on the dot, dot, dot. Like, we tried this, dot, dot, dot. Yeah, maybe that sounds sketchy. Or yeah, anything that is sort of unique. One that's coming to mind, I don't remember who sent it, but it was like, how to eat an elephant. Or like, how do you eat an elephant? And I'm like, what? What is this about? And it was, I think it was just about like breaking tasks, a big task into smaller things. So yeah, curiosity, pulling out some sort of awesome outcome or result, and then questions, I think generally are interesting.
That's true. It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
I keep going back to the lickety split. That would make me open that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Lickety split. And then something else you can do if you're writing a subject line, I think it may actually be some co-schedule. I use for blog posts, they have like a headline analyzer, and you can also find like subject line analyzers that maybe if you don't love writing subject lines or you're just unsure, you can run it through that and it might be like you not using interesting words or, you know, maybe this is too long or too short. So I think there are some tools that people can use to supplement, get an outside opinion.
Yeah. Did you mention that tool? Sorry, I totally missed that.
Yeah. So I think it's also from CoSchedule. I know I use like a CoSchedule headline analyzer, and I believe they have a subject line analyzer. I imagine there are other tools as well.
Nice. What are some baseline in terms of open rates you see, and this is mainly B2B SaaS or any other like emails that you're seeing, like how do you know it's bad? Like what is a bad open rate? I think it's going to be clearly obvious, maybe.
Zero? No. I don't know. So I don't have a ton of data. It's something I'd love to collect more of, this data, but obviously people probably aren't super willing to hand over their information. And I don't have, I'm sure there are reports and I've looked at, but I don't remember for the industry what's good. But just looking within your own company, I think a lot of it is relative. What open rates are you getting on other types of emails? You know, are they going up or are they going down? So, I mean, I think even with within some of my emails, I've linked to sort of like industry reports. And while those are good, I also think it's good to look at your own data and what are your top performing and worst performing emails? And are there any links that you can see between those to do more of what's working, if that's helpful?
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's, like you said, it is comparative and relative.
Yeah.
One of the things that also affects open rates, I think, is who the email comes from. I noticed some onboarding emails come from a person like Sam from Shopify, but I noticed Shopify, I did sign up for their tool. You just come from Shopify.
Yeah.
Right, it's from the tool. Going back to your strategy, like what are some things that founders or marketers should think about, whether that email should come from the company or from somebody like the CEO's name, like Max or something?
Yeah. So like a lot of other elements we've touched on, it probably comes down to brand personality and preference. I wish I had some data that said like, oh, this one is, you know, way outperforms doing this way. But you don't live in such a clear cut world all the time. I know that I tend to prefer if it comes from the company name, just because if I'm on like a phone and the name gets cut off and it's like Sam whoever at, but I don't see who it's from, if I don't know who the email's from, I might not open it. But if a company wants to use a person's name, like a Sam at Shopify or whatnot, a few best practices or what was the word I was going to use? Stipulations of please do this is that I would say limit your sender name to like maybe two. So like maybe you have company or plus Sam at Shopify. Because I have been on the receiving end of emails where, I mean, and it wasn't a SaaS, but one, they just sent like so many emails. But there were also like five plus sender names that I would get emails from. So they had like a few different people at the company that it would have their name in the sender and then a few different variations of the company name. And it was just all over the board. So I think if you can have a spokesperson that it comes from, And then something else, like if the sender name says Sam at Shopify, I think the email should read or feel more like an email from Sam at Shopify.
Yeah.
Maybe right. It's a little bit more plain text or conversational, not something that's super designed forward, because right. Then you sort of have this weird like dichotomy of, it says it's from a person, but this isn't how, you know, my friend would send me an email.
Right.
So I think it can work, but it can work as in coming from a person, but just being mindful of keeping it focused and making it actually from a person. Because then I think it can work, but there are rules.
Right. I never thought about that. Like, you're right. If it comes from somebody personal, you don't want it to look like it's been super designed.
Like... Yeah, from like an anonymous team or something. Yeah. Because I do have emails in my onboarding email inbox, more like retention emails, that come from a name, but it's like that person is writing the email. And then when it's like that, maybe you can build a connection with the person and their personality can come through. But if it's just going to be like a one-off or a two-off email from that person, just make it the company's name. Because if I don't have time to learn who that person is and remember who that person is, then it can just muddy the water.
True. Yeah, totally true. I saw one of your blog posts, and it's somewhat related to this, about welcome emails. You know, you wrote the best practice for welcome emails. Just from experience, welcome emails are some of the highest open rates, just because it's like right in time, like you sign up for an app.
Yeah, it's there.
It comes usually like right away with information that you might find useful. What are some best practices and the do's and don'ts for welcome emails?
Yeah, so probably the first do, as you mentioned, they have super high or higher open rates. Use that momentum as much as you can. So having a really clear step, like a launching point for someone to act on. Something else that I think is really important in a welcome email is to introduce the company and your perspective and your goals. Sort of, I love when emails have, you know, at the top from the company, it's sort of like, this is why we do what we do, right. How we do it, and what we want to achieve. I think it's a great reminder. I think it starts to build that brand personality and why might I connect with this brand. And then I think another great bonus is to set expectations for what's to come. So like, we're going to be sending you more tips on how to use this. I don't remember what the sequence was because I think it's been a while since I've seen it, but I've seen like onboarding and welcome email sequences that in the subject line, it will say like, you know, blah, 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 1 of 4, and then 2 of 4. Or at the bottom, it'll say, you know, this is welcome email number 3 of 8. So you're setting the expectation that more information is incoming. And then maybe they can be on the lookout for that, or at least be aware.
That's totally true. It makes sense to, I guess that welcome email should set the expectation of, you know, how many emails we're going to send you 5 tips coming up from our customer success lead.
Yeah. And then it also sets expectation for like, this is who we are. This is what we sound like. This is what we're going to help you do. Maybe even, no, this is probably beyond the view of the welcome email, but setting expectations of what it takes to be successful. So I just signed up for like Duolingo emails, which normally I associate Duolingo with push notifications on the phone. So I'm interested to see what the emails are like. But they're very upfront that, hey, if you want to be successful for this, it might just be a few minutes a day, but it has to be consistent. Or, right. Oh, it might take you this long to get this set up. So I think expectations are very important for that groundwork.
Once you've set that expectation, you know, there's going to be a mixture of value focus emails, which is like, oh, this is how you do this, or like, this is how you increase your sales using this feature. And then there's also the sales emails like, oh, by the way, you're halfway through, you should purchase now. I noticed when you looked at Shopify Teardown, they had like 6 or 7 value stuff and then 3 sales focus. What's the balance? Like, what is it like, oh, that's too much value. You should ask them if they're interested in purchasing. To the point where like, oh my goodness, you're asking me to buy all the time. You're kind of annoying me. Like, where is that balance?
Yeah, there certainly needs to be a balance, because I think it's maybe Grammarly. And there's not, I use Grammarly all the time, so I'm throwing them under the bus. But I think with their emails, it's sort of like, welcome, install, you know, this thing to use it. And then like an email or two later, it's like upgrade now for 40% off or whatever. And I'm like, I just met you. but I also think you need to remind people when the end is coming up. So say you have like a 14-day sequence, maybe it's right. 7 days. It's like, you have a week left. You're halfway through. You shouldn't just be on the last, either you know, this would be really the worst, to let it completely end without mentioning it.
Right.
And then be like, hey, you guys didn't upgrade. I think if you could have a couple emails at the end, you know, maybe you have one halfway through that's like, hey, you're halfway through. And then a few days out, maybe you start to introduce an offer. Cause sometimes companies would be like, oh, if you upgrade with an annual plan, here's a deal. You don't have to have a deal. But just don't wait till the end. Right. And I'd say even like 50-50, maybe this is controversial, 50-50 may even be a bit much selling.
Right, I agree.
You know, maybe it's more like 60-40 or 70-30. Because you definitely want to bring it up, but don't let it be the second email.
Right, that's true.
I need to know you first.
Yeah. And that's totally what Shopify does. It is a 70-30 split, I think, where 70% is like, oh, this is how you grow your store. This is how you do ads. And then like halfway through and then 3 days before, they're like, oh, by the way, your trial is ending.
Yeah.
You should add a credit card or something like that.
Yeah.
Do you have any best practices for that sales email? You did talk about like cold emails, which is a different type of sales email. But like, is there any best practices that you see for the selling piece? Like you're actually trying to get them. You talked about discounts. Like, is that a best practice or is that a good thing to do?
I don't know. Again, I wish I had more real life data on like companies, a single company testing with and without it. I know something that I've seen that I think is worth testing is trying different angles. So I refer it to as like a push and a pull. And I think it might be FreshBooks, where say there's one sales email that's like, here are all the amazing outcomes you can have if you upgrade today. It's like your future self will thank you.
Right.
Wonderful and magical. And then more towards the end, it may even be a win back, but a later sales email is more of a, what I would consider, you know, repelling you away from your old ways towards FreshBooks. Because it's like, do you really want to go back to your clunky spreadsheet? Maybe you start softer with those great, wonderful outcomes in the future. Here's the amazing things that you can accomplish if you sign up today, sort of pulling them towards signing up. And then maybe if that hasn't worked, then you can start maybe amping up the pressure a little bit more. But I'd say probably don't do that in the opposite.
Yeah.
Start, and never to be mean, but like start as kind and like as motivating and positive right. as possible. And then maybe you can start to light a little bit more fire as it goes along.
Yeah. It's like a good cup, bad cup. You'll probably want to start off with a good cup.
That's perfect. Yeah. I don't know why I've never thought of it that way. Yeah, exactly. It's like good cup, bad cup. Start with a good cup. I mean, you've provided a ton of value, you've sent them things, but maybe, you know, different people have different buttons, you know, work to motivate them. So.
I never thought about it that way. That's something that I'm going to think about more.
Yeah. And I'm sure even between each person, but from company to company or industry to industry, maybe different angles of motivating are more powerful than others. I think another analogy or comparison is like vitamins versus a pain medication. So selling them on the vitamins, selling them on the pain meds, like, oh, you can move away from those terrible things, but really they need like the vitamins, which is the preventative care or whatever. Lots of ways to think of it. I think visually. So that's why you get lots of these.
Right. Makes sense. I want to talk about results. Like you've worked on like onboarding emails for SaaS companies. Is there anything you've seen where any work you've done where you totally revamped it and what was the result in terms of like getting more people to convert to paying customers?
I wish I had more results to share. A lot of the ones that I've worked on are still in process, or they're still waiting for the time to pass where they can be certain. It's something I'm working on for sure to test and then get some of those solid numbers, but it's still in process.
Okay, no problem. I'm just about to wrap up now. I love asking these questions. This particular question, if you had one piece of advice for marketers or founders, whether that's about onboarding emails or just marketing in general, what would that one piece of advice be?
So this may seem almost obvious or strange, but something that I'm passionate about is making business more human. I think it's really easy to get caught up in, you know, metrics or strategies, but if you can root your strategy in the fact that for a SaaS, it's an actual person using your product that has goals, and how can you help that person achieve those goals? Anchor all of your planning in that, in helping a person be successful and talking to them like a person and considering the emotions of the person and injecting all of that into your strategy. I think it makes a difference. yeah, a little bit vague, but I'm all about, let's not be stuffy. Like, you know,
yeah,
people have emotions and goals and challenges, and let's face that. Let's work through that together.
I like that. That reminds me of a quote from, he owns a marketing agency, Billy Jean. He was on a podcast once with Dave Gerhardt. He's the VP of marketing at Drift. And he said he doesn't do B2B marketing or B2C marketing. He does human marketing because he did a Facebook ad for a B2B company and it was like using Street Fighter. Like it was a video of two guys fighting and it's like, that's not a B2B ad.
Yeah, not what you'd expect. Yeah.
He targets humans. It's all about speaking to a human, like what you said. That's, I like that.
Normal people. Yeah.
One last question. Where can people find you? What is your call to action for my listeners? Where do you want to send them?
Yeah, I'd send them to getyoursassonboard.com. So that's my website. That's where you'll find all of the onboarding email breakdowns if you want to see examples. I like to see it, and I've heard from other in-house marketers, they like to see what other people are doing. You get to kind of peek behind the curtain. So you will find that there. You'll also find resources. If you're working on strategizing or writing your own series, I have templates and strategy posts that I've heard from people like, oh, we used this to brainstorm for our series and it changed the way we thought about it. So there are those resources if you're more ready to work on it now. And then you can also reach out to me there. If you have like a one-off question, I love answering questions. One is I like to help people, and then also selfishly it lets me know what people want to know. So you can send me a question, and then more hands-on if you need help auditing or creating or recreating your sequence, that's where you'll find me as well.
Totally awesome. I did download 2 or 3 of your stuff and it's great. So I would vouch for how useful it is when I put together my own emails.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate stuff. Have a great rest of your
Friday. Thank you for having me. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for staying until the very end. I really do appreciate you. I'm going to share with you my 3 key takeaways. Number 1, don't leave your trial users hanging. One of the biggest mistakes that Steph found with onboarding emails is that they only sent 2 emails, one to say welcome and one to say goodbye. What kind of a relationship is that? That's not cool. People are forgetful. People are busy. So they sometimes need a gentle reminder of what the value of your app is. Second, don't be too pushy with sales. Steph suggests a 70-30 split with value-focused emails with sales-focused emails in your onboarding sequence. And this is something that she saw with onboarding sequence from Shopify, FreshBooks, and Wistia. Lead with value and the sale would be so much easier. Second, be human with marketing. This is Steph's one piece of advice for marketers and founders. At the end of the day, you're reaching out to real humans. It's so easy to hide behind the fact that since we love dashboards and metrics and conversion rates, this is more of a human-to-human marketing. You're trying to really reach out to another human being, and you have to think about empathy and understanding them even more. Did I miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode. You can find me on Twitter at RamleyJohn or email me at ramley@growthtoday.fm. As always, I've created a cheat sheet for this episode. You can get my notes, steal them, go ahead and share them. You can get it at growthtoday.fm/61. Find it in the link in the description of this podcast. I've put together Steph's step-by-step onboarding strategy to increase in conversion rates. You can get that there. If you've been listening to the show, please consider supporting it. This show is a one-person show. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials. 3 easy ways to do it. Number 1, tell a friend. You can tweet about it. 2, you can join the Growth Today mailing list where I'll mail you the cheat sheets of all the future guests. And also, I'll let you know who my next guests are. And 3, you can support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode to really pay for the hosting fees and marketing tools that I use for this podcast. I want to thank my early adopter Patreons, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Fabrício Marcias from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, and Sam Grover from New Zealand. I really do appreciate you supporting this and making this happen. As always, keep on growing. Passion, 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 passion.